The National Catholic Register is the essential and reliable source of news and views for Catholics. Subscribe today. Go to EWTN.com and click on the link for The Register or call 800-421-3230.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we're discussing the violence facing Coptic Christians in Egypt. Tim Drake will be interviewing Sam Tadros, an Egyptian Copt who works as research fellow with the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom at the Hudson Institute. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello again, Tim.
Hey, great to be with you, Tom.
Thank you so much. And Tim, this is certainly a very timely topic. On Sunday, October 9th, Egyptian security forces in Cairo attacked Coptic Christians who were just marching in protest of the lack of protection for Christian churches, many of which have been set on fire over the past year. In the resulting clash on October 9th, dozens of Coptic Christians were killed and an estimated 500 were injured.
That's right, Tom. I think in the U.S. here, we sometimes take for granted the religious freedom that we have. And to learn more about the situation in Egypt and the precarious situation for Christians in the Middle East, we're talking today on Register Radio with Sam Tadros. As well as being an Egyptian Copt himself, he works as a research fellow with the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom. And thanks for being with us on Register Radio, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
First, I'd like to just set the stage for listeners by letting them know the situation for Coptic Christians in Egypt. And I think it's important for listeners to also understand the history that Coptic Christians have been in Egypt and this region since St. Mark the Apostle brought the gospel to Egypt. That's correct, isn't it?
Indeed it is.
And in terms of the percentage of the population, what percentage of the Egyptian population is Coptic Christian?
Well, that seems to be one of the most best kept secrets in the Egyptian by the Egyptian government. The official government estimates in the past census was around 6%. After a Christian protest that this number did not reflect their accurate percentage, the government refused to release any number of Christians in later censuses. The church estimates the number at around 15 to 20%. The International Religious Freedom Commission at the U.S. gives a figure of 8 to 12. That's the general estimate there of the number of Christians.
Can you recap for us what took place in Egypt earlier this month?
What happened was a direct result of an attack on the church in Aswan in the south of Egypt, about 500 miles to the south of Cairo, the capital. That attack led to Coptic anger against both the attack itself and how it unfolded, and the lack of government response to it. It's important to note what happened during that attack before we go on to what happened in the massacre on the 9th of October. On the 30th of September, mob of local village Muslims attacked a church building that had been there existing in the village since 1940. That building had needed renovation, and the church had applied for renovation, receiving all the necessary government permits. Mm-hmm. However, the Muslims were angered by such a decision and asked for a conciliation meeting between Muslims and Christians. This is a normal practice whereby the government gets the elders of both communities and pressures the Christians to accept the demands of the local Muslim population. The Muslim population had four key demands. The first was that the church would have no bells, and Christians agreed to that demand. The second is that it would have no microphone, again, an agreement by Christians. The third is a demand that the church would have no crosses. And after a long fight, the Christians agreed to that demand as well. The fourth was that the church would have no domes. The Christians refused that, and this is what led to the attack. Those demands are very interesting as we move up on to understand the problem in Egypt. It's not that Christians are not allowed to live. They are, but only as second-class citizens. Any attempt by Christians to make their presence known by their religious symbols, by whatever other means, is automatically reacted against and seen as an affront to Islam in the country. The government's lack of action is also one that has happened frequently, whereby we see the governor of that governate in the south reacting to the attack by denying that anything major happened in his country, in his governate, that by blaming the Christians for what he calls a violation in the height of the building, by saying that there is no church in the first place, it's just the guest house, and by calling those that attacked the church building as our boys who went and corrected that building violation. Angered by this attack and by the lack of government response or the complicity of the government in the attack, the Christians decide to march in Cairo on the TV headquarters to protest peacefully and express their anger. Their demonstration, which is nearly unanimously Christian, there is, of course, some Muslim supporters with them in that demonstration on the 9th, but overwhelmingly Christian. They march from a Christian-majority neighborhood in Cairo, Shobra, to the TV headquarters. As they're moving from Shobra to the TV headquarters, they are met in the road by angry local Muslims who are angered by this demonstration for raising crosses up high and for its slogans, which are very clearly religious. The Christian's slogan is, raise your head up high, you are a Copt. As a result, they're being attacked numerous times during their march, which would usually take them about half an hour. It took them about 2.5 hours. So we get this first scene of the local attack on the Christians. The second scene is at the TV headquarters itself, where the army meets the Christians. Of course, the big question on everyone's mind is, did the army take a decision to shoot those protesters? Were orders given? I am personally skeptical that orders were given to kill them on the spot. My personal analysis of the situation is that the army, the officers, lost control of their soldiers. We have to remember here that the soldiers are conscripts that have reflect Egyptian society. They just served for 1 year in the army, and thus the army's loss of control of those soldiers with all their hatred and beliefs is possible. We have a number of videos on YouTube that prove this, with soldiers boasting of killing Christians and shooting them in the chest, with videos of army officers trying to stop some of the soldiers from shooting and from beating protesters. This, of course, is a very worrying sign. The third scene that we have of that day that's also important is the what happens after the attack, where the TV, the Egyptian official TV, starts calling on the good citizens of Egypt to go out to the streets to protect their army that is under attack, claiming that Christians are attacking the army and killing it. The Salafi TV channels, radical Islamist TV channels, join, of course, this campaign and declare that the Christians have burned the Holy Quran in front of the TV headquarters, which results in more Islamist-based mobs attacking the Christians as they flee the scene in front of the TV headquarters.
And do we still have a figure for the number of Coptic Christians who were killed? I've seen everything from 25 up to 50.
The generally used number is 25, 26. There are claims that some people are missing, and that's the assumption that there might be more bodies that will be found. There was a claim at a certain moment that the army threw a couple of bodies in the Nile, but probably very doubtful. But there are certainly some people missing that we can't account for yet.
We are speaking with Sam Todros, Egyptian Copt, who is a research fellow with the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom. We are talking about the situation for Christians in Egypt. And so since the attack earlier this month, what has happened since?
Well, we see, again, a repetition of similar patterns that we have seen in the treatment of Christians in Egypt. The army denies, of course, that it acted in any way to kill those Christians, claiming that some foreign outside elements might have infiltrated those protesters and shot at the army and led to that. The most funny was the army's claim, after videos surfaced of armored vehicles running over people, that some of its armored vehicles and tanks might have been stolen, which started a sarcastic campaign in Cairo, look for the missing tank. The more serious developments is that the army has arrested 28 Christian youth, accusing them of being the ones that killed the other protesters. So basically, it's the Copts that killed themselves. And those 28 youths will become the bargaining chip that the government and the army will use with the church leadership to cool the situation down. The church does not attempt to cool things down. Those people will face very harsh military sentences. The army has also started questioning key priests that have played a very vital role in organizing the Christian protesters. And one of them, Father Matthias Noss, was questioned yesterday by the army's prosecutors on his role in supposedly starting the whole thing.
The Coptic Christians are facing opposition not only from some Muslims, but also from the army itself.
Yes, I think three kinds of problems in this regard. There's the general atmosphere of intolerance that a large percentage of the general Muslim population have. Again, it's not that they want to kill their neighbors. It's that their Christian neighbors are not supposed to act as equal citizens. It's this attempt by Christians to raise their crosses up high, to act as equals, that leads to local attacks on them. The second threat is that of the government, both in its direct complicity in certain incidents and in its the culture of impunity that it provides to the attackers. When those attacks happen and not a single person is punished for them, the natural result is for the population to assume that attacks on Christians can happen and no one will be hurt because of it. The third threat, of course, is the rising Islamist threat, both in its what is portrayed in the West as the moderate Muslim Brotherhood and the more radical Salafis and Islamic Jihad and Jamaa Islamiyya. The threat that they pose, both in their direct involvement in attacks and on the daily lives of Christians. We've seen, for example, incidents of Christian girls in government schools, young girls, 10 and 12-year-olds, being forced to wear the hijab by the headmaster in the government-run school. That's not a direct order by the government, but this is an Islamist headmaster that then enforces what he thinks those Christian girls should do and should not do.
I want to remind listeners, we are speaking with Sam Tadros, a research fellow at the Hudson Institute Center for Religious Freedom, and we will be back with him in a moment.
And this is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Please stay with us as we continue this important topic.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in the culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner, or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. And Tim, you know, the situation in Egypt is so complex. That's why we're doing our second half, really the entire show, continuing our important discussion with Sam Tadros from the Hudson Institute.
That's right, Tom. And I want to let listeners know that they can learn more about the Hudson Institute and their work at their website, which is www.hudson.org. And Sam, Sam Tadros, who works with the Hudson Institute, has been kind enough to come back with us here for the second half of our show. Sam, I just want to continue learning a little bit more about the situation there in Egypt. Can you describe what was the relationship between the Coptic Christians and the former president, Mubarak? Did he have any particular kind of relationship with the minority Christians in Egypt?
The relationship between him and the Christians and the church went through different phases. initially Mubarak comes to power as the former President Anwar Sadat is assassinated. President Sadat had jailed Pope Shenouda of the Coptic Orthodox Church, banning him and removing him from the post of Pope and putting him under house arrest in one of the monasteries in the desert. Mubarak releases everyone that is Sadat had jailed, including the Islamists, including the other opposition figures, however, keeps the Pope under this house arrest for 4 years until January 85. So initially there's this tension between the state that is punishing or looking very suspiciously at the Pope and the Christians in general. The next phase is a phase of cooperation between the state and the Christians. The reason is the threat that the Islamist insurgency in the south, especially led by Ayman al-Zawahiri and other key jihadi figures, posed to the Christians. So in a sense, the Christians, although the state was not favoring them in any manner, but preferred the state to that threat that the Islamist insurgency posed. We see by the end of that insurgency in 2000, Christians coming out more and expressing their anger at the culture of impunity that's being provided by the government, by the lack of approvals. One of the key demands for Christians is their inability to build churches in Egypt and the kind of restrictions put on them. So we see much more tensions that culminate in the attack, the bombing of the Alexandria Church in New Year's Eve, just at the beginning of this year, and ultimately in the Egyptian Revolution. So while Christians definitely preferred at every moment a ruler to the general instability and had learned the lesson that better a persecuting ruler than a mob that had no constraint on its actions, their relationship with Mubarak was never a love relationship that perhaps some other minorities like the Christians in Syria have with the Syrian regime at the moment.
And listeners will be familiar with what has been described as the Arab Spring movement that is rising up in so many countries. Of course, we had the news yesterday from Libya. With the rise of this Islamist Arab Spring movement, has put Christians in these countries in a precarious situation, hasn't it?
Definitely. Christians, if to go back again, the patterns that we see today are historical developments. However, they have intensified extremely in the last couple of months since the revolution. We see an increase in the number of attacks. The reason is twofold. First, the collapse of the state. While the state, as we've mentioned, didn't provide security in many instances, its very presence put some limitation on the Islamists' ability to attack and affect Christians. The second reason is, of course, this rise of the Islamists that we see. People, the terrorists that killed Anwar Sadat are now in the Egyptian streets. They are forming a political party and running as good citizens in elections. The Islamists' presence in the public sphere has increased dramatically, and with it, their ability to affect the Christian community. We've seen again a number of very disturbing high-level incidents, such as the church fire attacks, the massacre at Maspero, but we've also seen a number of attacks that don't get reported that often in the Western press and that are the daily or affect the daily lives of Christians. Just an example, 3 days ago in Minya, about 200 kilometers to the south of Cairo, a Christian student in a classroom is asked by his teacher to remove his cross. Refusing to do so, to remove the cross that he's wearing, the teacher starts to beat him, joined by then the other Muslim students in the class, resulting in that Christian student dying. That kind of low-level threats on the daily lives, the forced veiling, the daily attacks, is also very threatening to the Christian community.
I wanted to ask, in Joan Frawley Desmond's interview with Nina Shea in the National Catholic Register, Nina said that this could be the start of an exodus of Coptic Christians from Egypt. And I was just curious, is there a particular place where Coptic Christians could or would go? Is there any Middle East haven for Coptic Christians?
Unfortunately not. While we've seen the exodus and the attacks on the Jews in some 60 or 70 years ago, they had a state to go to. The Christians in the region, of course, especially the Egyptian Christians, don't have such a possibility. While the Copts represent the largest Christian minority in the region in terms of numbers, their percentage inside Egypt does not allow them to even have any local autonomy. They are still at a maximum 15% of the population. More importantly, they are not located geographically. Their geographical distribution is not in a certain area. They don't have something like Mount Lebanon, which for centuries had provided protection for the Maronites and the Druze communities. So their situation is very problematic. More importantly, due to years of isolation from Western Christendom, due to the schism between the two churches, the Copts had never developed the kind of international relations that, again, a community like the Maronites have. The British occupation was not dear to them. Unlike the French and the Levant, the British in Egypt did not favor the Copts. In fact, they favored replacing Copts in government service with Muslims. So it's in a sense, if the Kurds are the unluckiest ethnic minority in the region, it's the Copts that are the loneliest, and their only option is immigration. Of course, we've seen reports of about 100,000 Copts leaving Egypt from the beginning of the revolution. These reports are exaggerated, not because 100,000 Copts wouldn't want to leave, they definitely would, and much more, but because Western embassies did not provide 100,000 visas, since in the past 8 months they simply lacked the capacity. But we are dealing with the possibility of such a wide interest in immigration. Everyone I have been talking to in Egypt at least thinks about the question, is Egypt of the future a place that will be welcoming to its Christian, or might Egypt become perhaps a democracy, at least in holding elections, but not a place that Christians can live in anymore?
And historically, didn't many Coptic Christians leave Egypt following Nasser's coup over the king in 1952? Is that accurate?
Indeed. We see the beginnings of Copts leaving Egypt with 1952 intensifying throughout the years. We have a number of large Christian communities in the United States, in New Jersey and L.A. especially, as well as in Canada and Australia, with some minor communities in Western Europe. But Coptic immigration is no new thing. However, the scale of that immigration might be something like we've never seen before. The West or the world was able or unable to deal with the Iraqi Christians. The numbers there were much less, not even 10% at the numbers of what we will be dealing with if indeed the situation worsens a lot, and if indeed the next elections bring the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamist forces to control of the government. We might be seeing a mass wave of immigration.
Sure. And I want to remind listeners, we are speaking with Sam Tadros from the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom. I just have one last question, Sam, and that would be, as we in this country are hearing about the persecution and the violence against our Christian brothers and sisters in Egypt and elsewhere, we can certainly pray for them, but can you identify some organizations that exist to help the plight of Christians in Egypt and throughout the Middle East, so that those of us in this country, what's the best way for us to help?
I think the best way to help, first, of course, is praying for them. Bring the message of their plight to your communities. As I said, this is a lonely minority that has not had the kind of connections with Western communities as others in the past had. So their plight perhaps gets a front page story in the Washington Post when a big massacre happens. But their general situation is extremely underreported. Bring the message of what is happening to them to your communities and your churches. On a policy level, the U.S. government has been spending now an estimated $165 million on democracy-related organizations in Egypt in this past 8 months since the revolution. Is this money being at all part of it provided to the Christian community or not? Is the State Department taking the Christians into consideration, giving them not more than their natural share, but anything out of this funding? That's a key question to pressure Congress on providing funding for those Christians to help them gain representation inside the country, organize politically, and so on. Making sure that the rest of the money goes to groups that are not only committed to democratic values, but as one of the key benchmarks to religious freedom. And more importantly, as we see urgently today, we have the International Commission on International Religious Freedom, who has one of the commissioners, Nina Shea of the Hudson Institute, and that commission is being threatened today with closure by the U.S. Senate. The funding for the commission, which is a very minimal number, has passed nearly unanimously from the House with 391 approvals. However, a member of the leadership and the Democratic leadership of the Senate has put a hold on that funding. So this commission that has published the reports attempting to bring the plight of both the Christians and other minorities around the world to the forefront of attention is being threatened of being closed.
Well, Sam, I want to also mention an organization called the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which is actually a papal agency for humanitarian and pastoral support of peoples in Egypt and other countries in the Middle East and the East. And I want to thank you, Sam, for taking the time to just give us the background on the Christians in Egypt. Thanks for being with us on Register Radio.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you both. I certainly want to thank Sam for jumping in here and being with us for the entire program. We were going to have somebody on from the Catholic Near East Welfare Association. That interview was unavailable kind of at the last minute, so Sam graciously agreed to appear on the entire program. And thanks to everyone for joining us this week on Register Radio. For Tim Drake and everybody at the National Catholic Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is made possible by donations from generous listeners like you. To bless us with your gift, visit ncregister.com and click on the Donate tab or call 205-568-9756.